You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering Anna's question. Anna is in Canada, and she reached out about what to do regarding interpreting the child's play and or drawings or anything else they do in the playroom through the child-centered play therapy lens. And this is extremely important because in certain environments, in certain workplaces, with certain play therapists, everything hinges on interpret the why behind the play. And that actually does not really closely align with the child-centered model. And I will explain a little bit more about what I mean, because I don't want you to think that we never try to understand the why. We do, but it is not at the heart of the child-centered model and the non-directive approach. So let me read you her question, and then we'll dive into that a little bit. So Anna, thank you for reaching out to me and submitting this. I think this is really helpful. So Anna says, I have a question for you. Under the child-centered play therapy lens, it is important to understand why a child chose certain characters for the sand tray or other kind of play, the way that they played with them, if they made a drawing about monsters or dogs or stars, ! So she's wondering, is it important to understand all of this? And then there's a little bit more that I think puts this in context for why she's asking. So she says, I usually see all of it under the umbrella of it's what they're needing to do at that moment to self-actualize. Yes, very child-centered. Either it's directly related with their story trauma problem or not. Sometimes I see a clear correlation, sometimes zero. Or in general, I try to see if their play is under themes of aggression or moving to a more nurturing phase. Yes, very child-centered. However, I feel that in my workplace, they focus too much on the whys that the child did it and use it to advise or make an intervention accordingly, including providing guidance at schools and or to parents. Would love to hear your thoughts. So Anna, thank you. So let's dive into this a little bit because this is very important. Obviously, if you're in an independent private practice and you just are kind of running your own show, this is not going to be something that you feel pressured to do, but it's certainly still relevant about how much do we need to understand the why. And then if you feel like your work environment is very pushing toward the why and the interpretation, this is really helpful to unpack. So when we are looking at a child's play, I guess the first thought I have is the longer you do this, and the longer you are wholly child-centered. Because if you've been doing play therapy for years, months, years, whatever, but you've only recently begun the child-centered exclusively model, then you're going to need more experience and hours and time in the playroom before you can get to what I'm about to describe. But if you are wholly child-centered and you have been for a long time, you start to see patterns, you start to gain insight, you start to understand what's going on just because you see the same things over and over and over again. So with time comes awareness and insight. And it allows you to connect the dots. So the longer you do this, the longer you sit in the child-centered pocket, and the longer you trust that this process works and that the child is doing what they need to do, you will start, if you are intentional, you will start to see things make sense and you'll say, oh, okay, yeah, I remember when that other kid did that and this is what was going on there. And so this is probably the same thing. And you'll be able to start making those connections and you'll have better insight into why the child's doing that, what therapeutically is happening, what value they're going to gain from that type of play, what they chose, what they drew, whatever. Okay, so that's kind of the blanket umbrella of you do eventually get better at those things the longer you do this. And I also think, as a related aside, I think some people just have that brain that is able to analyze and interpret and kind of gain insight on the fly. And then I think there are some therapists that just really struggle with that. So I think some of it is also kind of like a personality gift. So some people can just kind of instinctively get what's going on and some people really can't. So it could also be that some people have a little bit better skill set for that than others. So there's kind of the overarching. Now, when Anna, you're asking, I'm always kind of looking in terms of this is what they're needing to do at the moment to self-actualize, and it's related to their stuff that's going on or it's not. But in general, I can find the theme and I can see that there are shifts within the theme. Yes, yes to all of the above. That is wholly aligned with the child-centered approach. The only thing that we are striving to do in the playroom, I guess there's two things. I can't say the only thing. The two things that we're striving to do in the playroom is to preserve the relationship, because the relationship is at the heart of everything that we do. So every decision, every skill, every comment, every interaction, it is to preserve the relationship. So that's our number one goal. Secondly, our goal is to communicate the be with attitudes. I'm here, I hear you, I understand, I care, and I delight in you. So if we accomplish those two things, we don't need to have insight into why the child's playing anything. We don't need to deep dive into if they drew a monster, that must mean that XYZ. There's no need to go any further than the relationship and the be with attitudes. Now, do we need to know the four pillars? Do we need to know the principles? Do we need to know what to say in what scenario? Do we need to be grounded in all of the skills that are surrounding the child-centered model? Because I don't want, if you are new, welcome, so glad you're here. But if you've not listened from episode one and gone all the way through all of this, I don't want to give off the wrong impression that the child-centered model is we don't have any skill, we don't do anything but just make sure that the relationship is healthy. That is not at all what I'm saying. And for those of you that have been with me from the beginning, you know that's not what I mean, but I want to make that clear because I don't ever want something to get misconstrued. However, with the skill, with the knowledge, with the training, with the education, we use the four pillars, we understand the principles, we know the rules of thumb, we have all of this in our tool belt when we're in the playroom, and we're serving as therapeutic guide rails for the child through this communication and this interaction. However, do I need to know why a child is drawing a monster to fall back on my training and my knowledge of what I need to say and do in the playroom? No. Who cares why the kid's drawing a monster, quite frankly? Who cares why the child is painting stars and a moon? They like painting stars and a moon. They had a class in astronomy today, and stars and moons are in their brain, so they're going to paint some. Sometimes it means nothing, but sometimes it's extremely therapeutic. It's always therapeutic, but sometimes it's really deep and there's like really deep rooted stuff going on. But that is not our job. Our job is to experience the child's play through their eyes and be with them in the moment. So it's not that we don't gain insight or perspective. I would say almost every session inside my head, I'm going, oh, look at that. That was a big shift. Oh my word. Look, he's playing with dragons. That's important. There's always that kind of stuff going on in my head, but it does not change or influence anything that I do in the playroom. I think that's the most noteworthy piece of this for Anna and for all of us, right? Do we want insight? Is it helpful? Yes, of course, sometimes. But we don't do anything differently in the playroom. That's what you need to walk away with. Whether you gain insight or not, whether you understand why or not, whether you can dive in your own brain and figure out what's going on or not, you do nothing different. Go back and listen to my Don't Deviate podcast to kind of get yourself in this mindset, right? Because all we do is sit there, experience it through the child's eyes, communicate the be with attitudes, and make sure the relationship is preserved. So, Anna, your last part of the question, when you said, in my workplace, I feel like they focus too much on the whys they did it and use it to advise or make an intervention, including providing guidance at school and to parents. Okay, so the why, when you're trying to focus on the why of the play, the only reason you would want to do that is so that you can intervene or advise. And both of that is directive play therapy. So if we are child-centered, if we are non-directive, we don't give advice, we don't intervene, we don't direct anything in the play. So our model actually does not require nor necessitate the why. And sometimes we enlarge the meaning. If we understand something is pretty deep and there's something pretty significant going on, we might enlarge the meaning about what the child is going through. So the child is playing out snakes and one snake is getting left out and it's over off in the corner and the other ones are playing together and one snake's over here. You know, you could track that. You could reflect. You could use your reflective responses. You can use your pillars, but you might enlarge the meaning and say, that snake must feel lonely that no one wants to play with it. That's an appropriate, I'm air quoting, interpretation of the play. So when we enlarge the meaning, that's extremely helpful for a child. But other than that, the why becomes irrelevant because all we're doing is continuing to stay in our child-centered lane and we use the same skills. And then my final thought is the only thing that we ever want to take as far as providing guidance at schools and to parents, that was the last part of Anna's question. They use it at her workplace to provide guidance at schools or to parents. Hey, the only guidance that we ever give to a parent is child-centered skills and tools so that they can mirror and complement what we're doing in the playroom at home. So if a child really needs to be given choices at home, you educate a parent about choice giving. If a parent really needs help on limit setting, you teach a parent how to set limits from the child-centered model. If a child feels invalidated all the time, you help a child learn how to reflect the child's feelings. So you can absolutely give them guidance about skills and tools that you're already using in the playroom that the child is responding well to. And another goal we would have and the guidance we would give is to normalize what's going on. It's okay that your child is stuck in this behavior pattern. It's expected that they would be struggling after what they've gone through. They don't really have an emotional vocabulary yet, so they don't really handle their big emotions well yet. They're learning regulation. It's okay that they're in this place. It's going to get better. You can trust me. You can trust the process. You can trust your child. It will be fine. We normalize. Those are the things that we guide parents about. We equip them with child-centered skills and we normalize what's going on to give them hope. Beyond that, we don't give parents guidance. We don't give schools guidance. They're not therapists. So we're actually setting the whole scenario up for failure to try to intervene or advise and then therefore take that and say, oh, here's what you need to be doing with your child. Unless it is a child-centered play therapy-based skill, never do for a child that which they can do for themselves. When a child is drowning, it's not the time to teach them to swim. Be a thermostat, not a thermometer. Here's how reflecting feelings work. Here's how the encouragement pillar looks. You do that all day long. The more, the better. Oh my gosh, like help parents know how to effectively interact with their kids in a kind, respectful, loving way. So give them all the skills and the tools you can possibly imagine that are relevant to the scenarios that the parents are facing or the school's facing even. But in any kind of sense of advising or intervening or directing, that is not what we need to be doing. They are not therapists. They do not have the capacity to handle that. So, Anna, thank you so much for your question. I hope that is helpful. I hope that kind of seals the package a little bit there. And, you know, again, the relationship is at the forefront of everything, and the Be With attitudes are the most significant thing that we can give to kids. So monsters, stars, dogs, are they playing in the sand? Are they playing on the floor? Are they playing with a board game? Look, you know, a child playing a board game, there's a reason why they're playing a board game versus why they're beating the crap out of Bobo. Okay? That's pretty obvious, right? Like, we don't have to spend a lot of time to understand that if a child's playing a board game, there's a different reason than if they're beating the bop bag, right? Those are the kinds of pretty obvious insights that we gain without really working too hard. Beyond that, it doesn't really matter, because the child is doing the work they need to do. We are supporting them in the way that we need to support them, and the process works. So, Anna, thank you so much for your question. And if you have scenarios that you're trying to sort out at your workplace, please email me. I would love to answer your question in a further future episode, rather. Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And check out playtherapynow.com for some training opportunities. I have virtual training. I have live training in Tampa if you live close or you can move. Love to have you. So playtherapynow.com, you can check that out. And there's all kinds of training options there. I am so very grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you for those of you who are listening all over the world. I feel like every week there's someone from a new country that reaches out to me. So what an amazing thing this has been. I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. I look forward to talking with you again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.